Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to You'll Love to See It, Thin Bites movie review podcast styled after a delightful neighborhood video store. Every week, our friendly staff watches a movie and decides if we will always love it and therefore believe it deserves a spot in our prestigious staff pick shelf, if it almost had it all, but not quite, and thus gets to hang out with the totally fine picks of our middle aisle, or if the movie in question has nothing for us and ought to be sent where the broken hearts go, straight to the dumpster out back. Working the counter today, we have yours truly, Fernanda, stay with me, Frank Praches, and my fellow queen of the night, Danielle, again, a peach, Riondo. Hi, Danielle.
Hi, how are you?
I'm very excited about today's discussion. I dropped a few hints, but they were very subtle. So I don't know. Super, super low-key. So I don't know if our listeners have picked up on
it.
But first, I'm sure they have. They're very smart people. But first, let's introduce this theme's month, because it's December, and obviously we have a new theme. And we are kicking off a new holiday tradition with our trademarked Happy Pop Holidivas Month. And while we're sure you can figure out what that entails, being that you are a listener and therefore a person of superior intellect and distinguished taste, we'll explain it anyway. Throughout December, we will pick movies featuring musical divas who also took their talents to the big screen. Get it? Holidays, Hollywood, divas, Hollydivas. I know. We're also in awe of our own genius sometimes. Whether the divas in question started off with acting or just got into later on, whether they're good at it, whether they're not, none of it matters, as long as we believe they possess the true Hollydiva spirit. And we figured, what better way to start preparing for the feelings of inadequacy that will inevitably take over during this month's family gatherings than to be utterly humbled by the outrageous talent of the late Whitney Houston? Which is why we're kicking off the festivities with a true classic, The Bodyguard.
Bill said he used to be with the Secret Service.
There was 2 years with Carter, 4 with Reagan.
Reagan got shot.
Not on my ship.
All my colors for you.
All right.
You don't look like a bodyguard.
This is my disguise.
Well, his timing's good. I won't hold it back
again. Someone was in my house?
Wait a minute, someone was in my house?
Everybody's afraid of something. That's how we know we care about things. When we're afraid we'll lose it.
How about you, Frank Farmer, out there on the edge?
Rachel, I don't want to get confused about what I'm doing here.
I'm not confused.
You pay me to protect you. That's what I do.
Then what is it?
I'm afraid of not being there.
Again, we know we're dealing with people of very refined taste here, and as such, we know that you know what The Bodyguard is about. But in case you need a refresher, The Bodyguard is a 1992 movie starring Kevin Costner as Frank Farmer, a very good bodyguard, who we know is very good because he used to guard presidents, but mostly because he can throw knives to a wooden plank. After reluctantly agreeing to protect megastar Rachel Maron, played by literal goddess Whitney Houston, from what seems to be a crazed stalker with a really bad wig, Frank finds himself in quite a pickle when he realizes that he just made the ultimate oopsie, falling in love. Frank is kind of a dick about it, and Rachel is kind of a brat about it, but Rachel still needs protecting, and protector Frank will. They bicker. She sings. A boat explodes. She sings some more. Shots are fired. And we discover that not everything is quite as it seems in this thrilling tale of love, lust, loss, luxury, and LeMay. I think that pretty much sums it all up.
Does.
I didn't want to spoil it because we're still early in our show. And as you know, this is the part in which we introduce ourselves as in regards to the movie. We talk a little bit about our history with the cinematic masterpiece in question. And so far, no spoilers. For this part, it's just basically setting the scene. So we'll start with that. Danielle, I'll start with you. What is your background? What is your history with The Bodyguard?
It's a long and storied history, but I will make it brief. I remember it coming out. I remember being like an 8-year-old in 1992 and being very excited about it because like my cousin who babysat me was going to see it on a date, and that was very exciting. And it was like, oh my God, she's going on a date. I want to watch this movie. However, my parents told me I need to be 15 years of age before I can watch this movie. Now, I always remembered that.
Why?
Because clearly I'm 37 and I still remember this happening. But I didn't watch it at 15. I watched it at some point later on in high school at a girls' track team sleepover party in high school.
That's a nice setting for it, though, I feel.
Yeah, like, it actually was pretty good. Over it. Yeah, it was pretty good. And, like, at that point, we're talking, like, late 90s, early 2000s. So, like, it wasn't like it was the hot new movie anymore. But it was still like, oh, let's watch a movie. This is a good one. As we ate pizza and were, like, talked about running, you know, as track team girls do.
Okay.
I loved it. Right. Well, you know, it's a good time. It's a good time for us all, you know. But, yeah, it I remembered liking it as a high school kid and being like, oh, I remember I had to wait till I was 15 and I was 17 or whatever. So, you know, I was doing great. And then I hadn't seen it since then. So this is yet another movie I haven't seen in 20 years. This is like three in a row, I think. Like, it's like the core Wild Wild West and then this. Like, just didn't see them for whatever reason for, you know, like 2 decades. And then now watching them again in this context. So, yeah, it was a bit of a journey. I will always remember. Just like I will always love you. I will always remember my journey with The Bodyguard.
That's beautiful. I wonder why they made you wait, though. Because no spoilers, but it's like there's not even a sex scene in the movie. It's like pretty tame.
Yeah, there's like a lot of like adult themes. Like I think the movie actually is much better written than I remember it being. And like, it's like there's actually some weight and, you know, consideration given to some fairly like difficult themes for sure. But it's not like you see a whole lot of action in certain ways. I suppose there's guns.
Yeah, but like
I'm trying not to spoil it. I guess there's people being shot. I guess that was it, maybe.
What 90s movie does not have guns? Like,
yeah, right. It's true.
Throughout every genre. That's my
It's true. There's a gun in every scene, you know?
Yeah. It's very like I think tame for in every kind of aspect. But we'll get into it. Like my whole thing, and I talked about this in a previous episode, but for kids my age growing up in Brazil, I feel like we have a very specific way of seeing these blockbuster movies because there is this massive network channel in Brazil called Globo. And, you know, I didn't have cable as a kid, and it's really big. Like, it's by far the biggest channel. And they used to play movies in this like special segment, it's sort of like prime time, and it was called Telecage. And then they had the afternoon movies that were Sessão da Tarde. And I don't know if it applies to like everyone my age from Brazil, but like I feel like I've kind of learned to start seeing movies as like, this is a Sessão da Tarde movie, Weekend at Bernie's. And this is a Tela Quente movie. And The Bodyguard to me is the ultimate Tela Quente movie.
Yeah.
Because like it was on later at night. So it's like you the kids weren't necessarily watching it, though I do feel, as we'll get into, it kind of had, I feel like it's, I don't know, I feel like it's a well-rounded enough movie that can really appeal to different types of people. But to me, it always had that feel. And I just remember it being on a lot. And I remember the commercials. And I was a kid. I didn't really understand the movie. But I remember, like, the Oscar scenes, the outfits, the singing. Like, it just felt very grandiose to me. And then many, many years later, I watched a couple of Whitney documentaries. I was actually rewatching one right now. One is just called Whitney, and the other one is Nikki. Whitney, Why Can I Be Me? That's by Nick Broomfield. And then I felt compelled to rewatch The Bodyguard at an airplane, actually, because it adds up that The Bodyguard is played on airplanes.
Like, yeah, it's a good airplane movie, I feel like.
And that's how I got reintroduced to it sort of recently. And I felt the same way as you did, Danielle, like kind of like I didn't remember it being this like. Not bad. It's a gripping movie. Like, is it a masterpiece? We'll get to it. We'll decide this later on in our shelf spec. But I just remember like it feeling like my memory hadn't treated, maybe hadn't given the movie its due credit. And then obviously rewatched it so we could do today's episode. And I'm really excited to get into the nitty gritty of it all. So now a brief warning before we get so emotional, see what I did there again, I'm on fire and dig into the stuff that is not right, but also the stuff that is okay. I promise I'll stop after this one. We're about to go over some of the specific aspects of the plot and the characters and other things that will involve major spoilers. So those of you heathens who have so far failed to watch The Bodyguard, beware as we commit one of the cardinal bodyguard scenes and let our guards down for the stripping it down section. I think we can't really escape the main... This is a Holly Diva special, right? Yeah. That's what we're focusing on. So I feel like we can't escape this major topic. And I guess the main thing we'll be discussing here today in regard to the movie, which is Whitney herself. I don't know. And I'm really curious to hear your thoughts on her, particularly in this movie, because I was reading up and I don't know, I think the feeling I got at the time is that her performance was kind of met with mixed reviews. I don't know, because I was really young when it came out. But like, I personally think she brought like a very interesting quality to the character. I feel like it's kind of how I felt watching Lady Gaga in A Star is Born, even though it's very different things.
Yeah.
These are fresh people, right? They're not trained actresses or whatever. And I just felt that their sort of like that freshness, that sort of charm really added to the roles in a way that I think maybe having a really experienced actress could have actually worked against it in a way. I don't know. I just kind of feel like she was really a perfect match. And I wanted to hear your thoughts on it.
Yeah, absolutely. I couldn't agree more. I think she's fantastic in this. So the mixed reviews portion of it, I'm kind of like, fuck. Like, who would say such a thing? She's honestly great in this role. And yeah, I also agree. Like, being a little too polished or a little too perfect here wouldn't work, because this is about the really essentially the inner life of a superstar and like the things you don't see. It's supposed to be about a person who is like, you know, the performance, if you want to say, is a tiny bit unpolished or a tiny bit raw. And I think it is a little bit. And I like that about it. It's because that's supposed to be this person at her most vulnerable. Like, this is a superstar who can't let her guard down, who can't completely get comfortable ever. And maybe she tries to, and maybe she fails at it. But it's a really, really good performance. And yes, she's kind of playing herself to an extent. Not in the particulars, right? But in the idea of being a superstar singer and actress. Like, there's that meta quality to this that is kind of inescapable, for sure. But she fucking nailed it. I wanted to watch every second of her in this movie. I'm also, like, a genuine fan. Like, I love Whitney Houston. I think she had an incredible voice. She was an incredible talent. I legitimately get very sad whenever, like, I hear her songs or watch a movie or see anything about her, because I think she was, like, an exceptional, exceptional talent. Like, what a fucking talent. And it's sad that she's not in the world anymore. You know, I get this way. I really do actually get this way about multiple incredible people. And I know they're superstars. And I know blah, 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 that, you know, of course, tabloid shit and celebrity shit, et cetera, et cetera. It's tiring. It's tiring to even, like, think about to an extent about how much of that is in their life and how much do you know about the person. But regardless, like, an incredible talent. And showing it off here, she's so charismatic. She's so unbelievably charismatic as Rachel. Like, it's hard not to fall in love with Rachel, even though she's obviously not perfect. Even though she, you know, she says a line about, like, how she has a reputation, you know, and things like that. She's just so goddamn charming, even when she's being an absolute brat. Like, a selfish brat. You're just like, oh, but she's so cute. Like, when she's being bratty, it's like, oh, but she's so cute. You know, it's honestly like a... just such a magnetic, charismatic performance. And I think it actually goes really well with Kevin Costner's, like, I don't want to call it wooden. He's just supposed to be a very stoic guy. I genuinely don't think it's a bad performance. Like, it's a note that I want to talk about later for sure. But, like, I think it's right for the role. Do you know what I mean? Like, I don't think he's, like, a wooden actor being boring. I think it's a stoic man who is stoic. And, like, that's okay. And that fits his personality and his, you know, worldview here. So, like, I don't think it's like, oh, there's an acting problem. I think it's like, oh, the most charismatic human ever to walk the earth is also sharing the screen with this, like, ice block of a man. And that's the point. And that's the point. That is actually the point. So I think it works well. And I think she is absolutely wonderful in the movie.
Yeah, it's funny because I had wooden in my head too, even though I agree with you, that's not necessarily fair. It's icy, but like in a way that's the character, right? Because he's supposed to be the one who's in control, the one who's unfazed, the one who has the method and who's no nonsense, right? And Rachel is the star. She's volatile. She is extremely annoying as a character. And that's how I feel that Whitney, right? Like, she's just sometimes just kind of like, ah, God, there she goes again. Just throwing another tantrum.
That's the idea. She's very bratty. Yeah.
Yeah. And then you have somebody as charismatic and as magnetic as Whitney. And I think that her sort of inexperience lends, you know, that air of, it makes it less like, it makes it more endearing in a way, or makes it more human, right? Like, I feel like it makes the character more forgivable because it makes the character more human. And I don't know if, like, a super well-trained actress, well, probably could, because super well-trained actress can do whatever the fuck they want. But, like, I have a tough time imagining somebody else kind of doing that. Like, it's the character really meshes with her very well. And it's crazy to think that it was her first break. Because it was, and Kevin Costner was actually the one, from what I was reading, really pushed for it to be her. Because apparently at the time, and that's what he heard, she wasn't really at the peak of her popularity, which hadn't come yet, because we found out, because after The Bodyguard, like, The Bodyguard soundtrack, I believe, is still the best-selling soundtrack of all time.
And I believe that. I had it.
Me too. My mom had it at home. And she didn't even like Whitney singing. My mom is a weird one. She doesn't like the divas in general. But she did like Kevin Costner, so he's a very mom appealing
mom pick. Yeah, friend to the moms, Kevin Costner.
But yeah, and I'm with you. I really, really love Whitney. And it makes me sad, obviously, that she met such a tragic end. She was only 48, I believe, when she died. In very tragic circumstances, but also the way that we as a culture treated her.
Yes.
Right. And we are having, I think, that reckoning with a lot of people and a lot of aspects of our culture. But even in the Whitney documentary that, as I mentioned, I was just watching, there's this scene where they put clips of like Saturday Night Live and Family Guy and like other, like a bunch of instances in which she was like mocked in pop culture, in which her very obvious drug problems were being treated as this anecdote. And I'm sure like you remember it because I was a kid and I remember like that just being a constant joke, like her presence, her public presence being a joke, her marriage to Bobby Brown being a joke. It's painful to imagine being in that position, right? And in the movie, obviously, it's very different. The threats are different. The characters are different. You know, the arc is entirely different. But I always, like, I look at these things and I look at these women's lives and I'm always like, who the fuck would ever want to be famous?
Yeah, just for real. For real.
Horrible.
It's so awful. And you know that, like, I mean, all right, look, I just came from family Thanksgiving, so I've had many conversations that are just like throw a roll at someone, you know, or like, you know that, like, oh my God, you can't, I almost like hear someone saying, yes, you'll have money though. Like that whole, like, whatever, it's fine to make fun of celebrities. They've got a lot of money. And it's just like, you know, maybe let's just be better than that. Maybe let's not make somebody the fucking butt of our joke because there's legit no need to do that. Also, listen, I'm not riding a high horse. I like a lot of like crappy things in my life. I just really don't like things that punch down. Like I just genuinely don't. And I think if you are making fun of a person for addiction, that sucks. Like I'm just gonna say, blanket statement, actually that sucks. Maybe shut up. Like, whatever. I'm not here for that. Like, addiction sucks and it's sad. There you go. There's my statement. Controversial opinion, I know. But I'm putting it out there that it's, like, not actually funny. It's not, like, a great joke. I know.
Going out on a limb with
that. I'm really going out on a limb.
But it's really crazy because I was a kid and I thought, like, the jokes were funny. And then I grew up and I'm like, grown-ups were making those jokes.
Right.
What like, the fuck, guys?
Fucking class. I'm sorry. But, like, really? That's who you're going to make fun of this woman for? Like, maybe go fuck yourself. I don't know.
maybe, like, literally do anything else that isn't this bad joke. We are re-examining things of our past as a culture and a society, for sure. But it's really heartbreaking to think, because like Whitney was a very manufactured, quote unquote, not manufactured, but her mom apparently really was kind of like pageant mom in a different way, that she really raised and made sure to create Whitney as this product that she knew was going to be accepted by everyone. And of course we have to race plays into this too, of course, because she's this black artist who wants to cross over, who wants to, you know, do pop music, and who wants and who really succeeded in that too, in being accepted in sort of all genres and by all audiences, even though that led her to being like booed in a Soul Train Award because she was accused of like not being sort of black enough. And you can imagine what that does to a person. Gosh. Like you're being put into this, first of all, like this explosion of popularity, right? Because imagine you're living your life one day and then like 1 year later, everybody knows who you are. I can't imagine this.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Right? wild. Like wild to even.
And you're being put out there as this like squeaky clean sort of character, which was kind of the image that she sort of had to fulfill at that time in order to be accepted. And, you know, of course, this outrageous talent, but there was an image that really went with it. And then like having to live your whole life. And, you know, we could do a whole podcast on Whitney alone.
Oh, yeah.
Those two documentaries I mentioned kind of touch on a lot of different things in regards to sort of the Whitney's sexuality, which was a big topic because of her partner in business, Robin, that a lot of people believe that they were romantically involved. But beyond that, so many things like, can you have to live according to this public image? And we've seen it with so many different performers and particularly women, that it's kind of like, I can even imagine living your life sort of, I don't know, having to live up to an image and yeah. not being able to just exist.
Yeah. And very much like, I think the movie actually does a good job. Like, again, I was actually kind of shocked that the movie does a good job in looking at like how consumable mm-hmm. women are in this industry. Like, this movie yeah. doesn't like Hollywood. This movie thinks Hollywood sucks, actually, which is good, which is great. Like, I'm on board. I'm in there with it. Like, there's many little things, like the shitty Psy, the publicist, being like, oh, she doesn't sing. If yeah. she doesn't do these gigs, she's dead. Like, she's dead. Mm-hmm. Like, just the way he fucking puts it and the way he's like, oh, you know, handled properly, this would be great publicity. Like, her being, you know, targeted in the movie by both a hitman and also a person who's obsessed with her and has mm-hmm. like, you know, masturbates on the bed. Sorry, content warning, but like a person who has like an unhealthy sexual obsession and also a hitman, which we yeah. find out, you know, we find her, out who hired him and yeah. all sorts of stuff. Like, that is actually one of the few things I remember, that the sister was behind it, but I actually forgot that there were two bad men, but
after you know, the sister was shady from the get go,
like, right?
When you watch it, knowing
poor Nikki, like, I feel bad for Nikki. Like, I really feel bad for Nikki, because imagine that's your life. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't think you should hire someone to kill your sister, first and foremost. Again, don't take my words lightly. Like, please don't think I think people should kill their sisters. However, I'm just saying, I feel bad for Nikki, who is just mm-hmm. like a fucking assistant. And it's like, yeah, I had a little band, but my sister was the real star. And it's like, all Nikki wanted was like her own little moment in the sunshine. And
she's saying too, right? Out.
She sang too. She did music too. She likes to dance in the fitness studio. Like, poor Nikki. I'm sorry, Nikki. You deserve better. You fucked up, but also you deserve better. It's both. It's honestly both for me, I think. Yeah, sorry. I like going off on a little tangent there. But
that's a complex character, right? Like, but it's
yes, there's a complex character. And it also does speak to, like, here are the things women can have. Like, that's it. Mm-hmm. And you can only have it if you're perfect in every way and your image has to be constructed in every way. And the ways in which you're not perfect, you will be lambasted forever. They don't go into this as in-depth in the movie, but there are a lot of things in the movie that, like, talk about the sexism of Hollywood. Like, the shitty Oscar host only making fun yeah. of, like, the sound woman who wins an Oscar for doing sound and how hot she is. Like, he makes, like, 10 jokes about, like, ho-ho, va-va, boom, she's the boom girl. Like, it was like, she just won, like, an artistic award, you piece of shit. And then he's just like, fucking actresses. Like, so there's all this stuff that's like, yeah, Hollywood is unbelievably sexist and racist. And here's this black woman attempting to make her way in it. And she's very successful and she's very good at what she does. Also, her family members are getting killed. And also, there's a man who comes in and jerks off on her bed. Like, her life actually sucks and it's hard. And yes, she has money and yes, she has all this stuff, but her life sucks and it's hard. And it's I know. Okay. It doesn't suck completely, because she does have Mr. Stoic's white man samurai who comes in
with his very sharp sword
and knife throwing
skills. And we don't mean that as a sex thing, okay? It was a literal sword. We don't know about the other stuff. It's not shown. Like we said, it's a very tame movie. Yeah. But there's a literal samurai sword that cuts through What was that? Like a not a tissue. It was a how do you call it? Like a scarf? It was like her
scarf.
Yeah.
I saw that and I was like, that's probably like a $5 million scarf. And he's just like, aha, look at how sharp my sword is. Like, oh, all right.
Well, she was playing with it rather recklessly. So
it's true. It's true.
It's a very 90s romantic scene. I love that. let's get into that. And that's the part that I'm kind of like torn on, because I grew up kind of thinking about this movie as this great love story. So to me, in my head, it's like, oh, Farmer and Rachel, they're like a beautiful couple with all this crazy chemistry, and that's amazing. And then watching the movie, I'm like, are they? I don't know. Do they have the romance? Is it's to me kind of weird, because it's kind of like, so Farmer has these, he's a super like straight laced, only drinks orange juice, very concerned, like, bodyguard who has these rules so as to be able to perform his job right. Then Rachel convinces him very easily to go on a date.
It's like, yep, very, very quickly.
And they, like, go to the movies, which, I don't know, I feel like you're kind of vulnerable in the movies if you're being chased by a crazy stalker. But what do I know? I have not protected a single president in my life, so I don't know. But then it's like, then they go on this date and they have a grand old time and they hear this country version of I Will Always Love You.
Yep.
And it's a very cute little scene, which is like talking about how it's like cowboy stuff and whatever, and remarks on the sadness of the lyrics, which is true because they are very sad lyrics. They're a goodbye song, basically.
And somebody always being left, like the way somebody's always leaving you. Like the way she puts it is very cute.
It's very cute. It's charming. It's a cute scene. And then they sleep together, and the next day Farmer's like, ah, yeah, I got too close. Like, now you're doing this. And she gets pissed. And I think,
rightly she gets pissed. She's like, I'm a big girl, I can take it. And he's just like, oh, I got too close. And it's like, buddy, listen. Just you should have better is ever going to come into your life ever in the history of the universe. Maybe just accept that she's great. I don't know.
Or like, don't go on a date.
I know his whole fucking deal is that he wasn't there the day Reagan was shot because he was burying his mother. And it's like, okay, first of all, it's fine. It's fine, buddy. It's fine.
First of all, it's Reagan. Fuck Reagan. Yeah, exactly. First of all.
Like, you know, it's fine, bro.
First of all, yeah, fuck Ronald Reagan. But second of all, it's like, he had several steps that he could have taken to avoid the situation. And then after he sleeps with her, he's like, ah, better not.
Like, and it's like, really?
You could have handled this better, Frank. I'm just saying, I can understand why she feels a little used in this situation and she starts acting out. Does she go a little overboard? Yes, she does. But then again, it's Rachel Maron and she can do whatever she wants, because she's like very famous and pretty and talented. And I love the maidenness of it all, like you said, because it's like she plays a singer who's also an actress who's nominated for an Oscar, which is amazing, because she is a singer who's an actress.
It's very like, okay, was this written for her? Was it not written for her? I know it wasn't originally. I know the original concept was not. But it's very like, okay, the ways in which it plays into her life, the ways in which it plays into things about her, it's obviously like something people remember that for. Right.
From what I read, it was actually, it had been like sort of floating around for decades.
Since the 70s, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And originally it was thought as a movie for Diana Ross and Steve McQueen. In the leads. That's
so interesting to think of that.
Yeah. And then it just like stay there for a long time. And I believe, I could be wrong, but I believe it was also like it took Kevin Costner sort of being invested in the project for it to to move along. And it's funny because I was doing research for to just get to the bottom of this stuff. And but most of the news I found were about a remake that was announced. Weird. Yeah, they're going to do a remake. I think it was actually announced just like a couple of months ago.
Oh, wow.
That it was in the works. So most of the news, I had to sort through a lot of things because most of the news were about that. But yeah, I kind of like, do they have, and that's the dynamic of the movie, right? It's this push and pull between the two. They had this like one, which we are assuming was A Beautiful Night, because again, it's pretty tame. But they sleep together, and then it's kind of like, it's a little adversarial at first. They sleep together, it's still adversarial and a lot of sexual tension and yada yada. And do they have chemistry though?
This is hard. So here's the thing, and this is why I need your help here. I need your help, mm-hmm. Fernanda, on this one, because I'm too gay to fully understand this movie. Like, listen, I'll be real. I'm basically pan. Like, every now and then, there's a guy. So it's not like I'm, like, mm-hmm. too gay to understand anything. However, this movie is, like, incredibly heterosexual. Like, aggressively heterosexual. Therefore, like, I need some help here.
Okay.
So I have to, like, because I'm me and everything has to be, like, I have to be able to put myself in people's shoes. I, of course, understand the appeal for him. She's a goddess. She's a goddess incarnate. She's a magnificent woman. She's talented. She's smart. She's funny as hell. And even when she's being an absolute brat, she's incredibly charming. So yeah. easy sell. And now, like, here I am trying. I'm trying to put, you know, another person's shoes on, another identity's shoes on. I can understand the appeal, at least on paper, of falling in love with a person who will take a bullet for you.
Yeah.
Like, he's not some fucking chump. He actually walks the walk in terms of protecting her. He actually really means it. He will do anything to actually protect her. And that's hot, right? Like, that's an attractive feature in a potential partner. They will go to the ends of the earth to protect you. They actually care. I know it's his job, and I know we can't divorce this from capitalism because we live in capitalism, and there's an employee-employer relationship, and that's hard, and that's a whole thing to deal with. But, like, outside of that, it is, like, an inherently attractive trait that this person is that competent, like, a hyper-competent person, and also that, like, genuinely serious about protecting her. So, like, I'm like, okay, you know, Kevin Costner doesn't really do it for me, but, like, I see how this is a real-ass thing, especially for a person who a lot of people in her life are very fake, like, real fake. Like, Sai is fake as shit. You know, like, obviously her sister is fake as shit because they pretend to love each other, yet she, you know, got stoned, which is really funny. Have you ever heard of somebody getting stoned and that's what they do? Instead of, like, fucking listen to music and, like, look at some nice, you know, posters or something. Like, she got stoned and went and hired a hitman named Armando to go and kill her. So, like, come on. Stoned? Really sorry.
That is the dangers of marijuana, children.
Exactly. It's such a, like an anti-drug statement. Like, you got stoned and that's what it made you do? Okay, movie.
I love that the dude's name was Armando. Right. He doesn't even know who hired
him. It's like, what?
Yeah, do not smoke the devil's lettuce.
Right.
Kids everywhere.
Right. Kids, it'll make you go get a hitman after your sister.
But she says it was weed. That's what I was kind of.
She said stoned. And it's like, okay. Yeah, listen, you should have said you were coked out of your fucking mind. That at least would make some sense.
Or you're very drunk. But like,
or trashed. Yeah. Stoned. Sorry. This is a weird beef to have with the movie. I'm trying to make an entirely different point. I apologize. It really threw me off. It clearly threw me off real hard.
but the movie, like, has a lot of those, in fairness to you.
There's a, like, lot of weird little moments of, like, is that what you meant, movie? Okay.
But you forgive it.
You do, because it's like, it's kind of charming. It's kind of a charming movie. I just want to say that. Like, I actually was very entertained, even though I knew what happens generally in the movie. I forgot some key things, like the fact that there were two bad men. And then also, you know, a few plot points here and there. But I was really entertained. So therefore, it must be some kind of success. They must have some kind of chemistry. And again, I had to do a lot of math in my head as not hetero enough to fully understand it. But like, doing the math, it was like, listen, I get how she might be very attracted to the one genuine person in her life who actually really fucking cares about protecting her and keeping her safe. Like, that's cool. I get that. I can understand this.
Isn't that like a thing that happens like in real life? I feel like I've heard this story before. Like, yeah. The pop singer who, I think Britney had a thing with, was it a bodyguard? I remember Sam was like
a backup dancer.
But the backup dancer, it's like probably common because backup dancers are like probably hot and they're there and you're hot too. Yes. So it's kind of like, if I was a pop singer of international fame, you best believe I would be coming on to like all of my backup dancers respectfully, because consent is very important.
Yes, of course.
Just making my availability known. Okay. Listen. And if I wasn't a married lady, of course, husband, right. Who always listens to the show and will shoot me a look when he hears this part. But I love the concept of like, hetero enough for some things, but not for Kevin Costner. I do feel like there's a generational gap. I feel like, like we were saying, Kevin Costner has mom and grandmom appeal, because my husband was saying that his grandma was in love. His Mexican grandmother was in love with Kevin Costner.
I love that. That's kind of beautiful. Like, I think that's pretty fucking good. You know, that's pretty fucking good.
I do feel like there must be an appeal, right? Like you said, you're surrounded by people who always want something from you. Yes. And you mentioned the slimy British guy, which was going to be actually my nickname for the show.
I'm sorry. Yeah.
And he's like, no, I consider it, because he's very much the guy who's like, we don't like, you might die, but let's not make her worry, because if she worries too much about dying, she will not perform, and therefore none of us make money. And that's a caricature, and at the same time, incredibly realistic and believable.
That's going to be the most real thing in the whole movie. Yeah, 100%.
And so you have this person who, like you said, it's their sole job is to protect you. And there's a scene after they do the do, and he mentioned, she says, oh, I've never felt safer. So I imagine they're probably like, there is a subconscious thing of like, oh, this man, like around this man, like I feel safe. At the same time, he was hired to do a job.
Yeah.
And the relationship is very adversarial, to the point where 32-year-old me is kind of like, you know what? I'd rather just like be at peace with someone than constantly
100%
feuding and navigating sexual tension. Like, that's a lot of work.
Honestly.
So I don't know. I feel like I'm my 15-year-old self would probably have been more enchanted. As a representative of the straits,
yes, we do need one. We do need one. It's true. It's true.
Because we're saying us cis straight people, there are many of us going around, you know, Danielle. It's very hard.
Yeah,
very hard.
It's hard to find one. It's really hard. Like, it's like I go outside sometimes. I'm just like, hello, is there a cis straight around? Hello.
It's difficult. And you don't see yourself in anything, in TV, music, because it's like, it's not like it's the dominant narrative of everything since forever.
It's so hard to find. It's so hard to find the representation, you know?
But yeah, I feel like in 92, to a certain demographic, that was probably very gripping. I can see why it was a very gripping narrative. For me today, it's like, I get it. And that's the thing with Kevin Costner. He doesn't do much for me either. He, to me, is like very, I don't know. He looks like he has dad energy. He was 37 when he did the movie. He was young.
He was my age when he did this movie. Yeah. Like, you know?
But to me, it's, he has dad vibes. I don't know. It's just...
It's the outfit. It's the mannerisms. Like, it's even in the text where, you know, she's like, oh, you don't look like a tough guy or whatever the line is. And he's like, oh, this is my costume. You know, like, he's very, like, purposely looking.
That was
hot. Looking.
That was a sexy line.
Yeah, like, I do get it. Like, the samurai thing is a little fucking corny. And perhaps a little problematic from a racial point of view as well. But, like, I do get the, like, general, like, appeal of, like, you are a super fucking badass, but you have to pretend to be kind of a dork, right? Like,
yeah,
that's part of the appeal of, like, the show The Americans, right? Where these two fucking super spies have to pretend to be, like, a dorky mom and dad. And, like, it's them pretending. It's them putting on their costume to, like, look like a nerd, basically. Which is kind of cool. Like, that part of it is actually cool. And he is, like, an actual badass. Like, the scene, I do want to talk about the scene with Tony. Tony, also a character I love in this
Tony's
movie.
Tony's awesome. Yeah.
Tony's the other bodyguard. He's, like, a beefier man. He looks more like a bodyguard, like a stereotypical bodyguard. Yeah. He's a big man. He's, like, a big dude. Uh-huh. And Tony is like, oh, I like to take care of things like this. Like, Tony's such a, absolutely an Italian-American. Again, I can say this as an Italian-American. Like, Italian-American guy who's like, he's been around. He knows the stuff. He knows what to do. And a show goes bad. Even though it's The Queen of the Night, my favorite Whitney Houston song. And that outfit is amazing. But the show goes bad. Some people get very inappropriate. They try to carry her off. She's crowd surfing and she doesn't want to be. And, you know, things go bad. And, of course, Frank Farmer, FF, Mr. F, takes her away. And there's this kind of moment, and that's, like, very much on the cover. Like, he picks her up in his arms, runs her away, uses her as, like, a battering ram, sort of, at one point to, like, get rid of some people.
I mean, if you have to make yourself useful in that situation. Yeah. Like, yeah. I wouldn't mind if I'm being carried away by my bodyguards.
Exactly. Like, you can use my leg. It's fine. I got you. Takes her away, gets her safe, and they're at home, and he's eating a peach. Of course, my name being, again, a peach. We've got a lot of peach props in our movies lately, a whole lot. He's eating a peach, and Tony comes in to kick his ass, because Tony's mad that things went bad, they broke bad. Tony had to walk home in the rain or whatever, and he's upset about it. And they wordlessly just, like, have a fight scene, and Farmer just kicks his ass in the most... You know,
casual
it's nothing
way.
For him. It's
very
nothing
nonchalant.
For him. He's eating the peach the whole time. Just, like, using the chair, using this, using that. Like, kicks his ass completely. And then he's just like, I don't want to talk about this again. Yeah. And from there on, they're good. They're cool. From that, then, like, on, they are buds. Like, it's kind of great. It's kind of a great, like, ridiculous, very toxic masculinity. But also, their, like, bro code has now, like, come to fruition. Like, they now work well together because of this ass-kicking scene. And it's, like, a great fight scene, too. Like, an actually fun and good action scene.
It's what I was saying. Like, the movie has so many of these little moments that are just so good in themselves. And to me, that scene is a very good example. Paul, our producer, just mentioned that that's how the toxic straights squash things. And as a person who specializes in writing about MMA, I can tell you that is indeed how it happens.
That's how things are dealt with.
A lot of the times, like, you just know that there is beef throughout the whole camp, and then they fight and hug it out because now they've earned each other's respect.
Yeah, it's pretty... It's like a great scene that has a terrible message, basically.
I would understand. I think there's kind of like a primal, in fights, in specific sanction fights, not this element of
course,
like, we know what we've been through together. One thing I quickly wanted to touch on before we move on. It's last week we were talking about Wild Wild West, and we mentioned the sort of, how the aspect of race was approached. Mm-hmm. And I mentioned that, you know, I thought it was interesting and sort of, you know, brave that they didn't act quote unquote colorblind, right? The fact that Will Smith was a black character was acknowledged, and it was a really big part of the narrative. And here we have the opposite.
Right.
it's completely unacknowledged. They are an interracial couple, but it's not debated. It's not, right. It doesn't come into the discussion. I read some things. Kevin Costner was very like adamant about downplaying all of it. Cause it was like, that's not relevant, to this narrative. Like, she's this amazing star and that's what matters. And then, on the documentary, they have him speaking, and then he kind of speaks a little to the importance maybe of this. And he was talking about how in that final scene, when Whitney leaves the plane and rushes to meet him, she was like leaving the same plane that so many white protagonists did, that she ran right. the stairs that so many white protagonists did, and the camera swirling, and they're like in that beautiful kiss and in the same place that so many white protagonists had been with the likes of Cary Grant or whatever in the past, and that that was a big deal. And I kind of wanted your opinion on it because, again, and we made this distinction last episode, we'll make it again, like we're white people having opinions on this. So there's that. But I don't know. I actually thought it was interesting that this was not, that this was just a love story with a lot of complicated factors in many ways. But that was pretty much just it. I don't know. Kind of wanted your thoughts on that.
Yeah, absolutely. So I find it very interesting as well. And I really like that perspective of like, she's the star, like, and she's allowed to act like the star kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Like, it's not, that's actually kind of nice. Like, I know I was talking about making the joke of representation matters, you know, for the straights, but it does legitimately. And like seeing like a famous black woman, like being able to act like a star in that way, like running down the private plane steps to kiss her lover kind of thing. Like, that's actually kind of cool. Like, to think of it that way. It's also, for me, it came up the most in the sort of family scenes with Farmer's dad.
Oh, who's like, the house.
They're in the middle of fucking nowhere. Everybody's wearing plaid. Looks like y'all gentlemen go hunting and things like that. And that's where it felt the most like, oh, like colorblind, because, you know, it's basically like two black women and, you know, not Whitney, sorry, I didn't mean to call her Whitney, but Rachel's son, Fletcher. Yeah. And like, They get along real good. Like, they're all having their little dinner and being cute and playing chess and things like that, where it feels like, oh, this is like a family moment here. This is like a cute little family moment. And it's kind of sweet and it's kind of nice. And there is that aspect of like, it's 1992. Look, America, like, it's totally cool to have white and black family members. Like, what, look at, you know, good job kind of thing. Like, there is an aspect of it that does feel a little bit corny and a little bit like looked upon, like, look at this, you know, like, look at our cool family that has, you know, members of different races. But at the same time, again, this movie just kind of makes things work sometimes. Like, maybe it is these little moments, and maybe it is the performances. And obviously, it didn't end up being the happiest family getaway because Armando or whoever, not Armando, whatever, it ends up being Portman. But, you know, the hitman comes and the poor little boy is like almost shot, like, or blown up, rather.
Oh, yeah, almost blown up in a boat.
And like, that's horrifying. Although it does allow us to see Farmer lose his goddamn mind, being so afraid that the boy will like get hurt on the boat at all, just like in the normal boat, not knowing there was a bomb on the boat, that he jumps and like pulls the kid into the water, like, which is the thing supposedly he was trying to avoid, is the kid going in the water. Not really clear how he thought that was a great idea. However, it is like kind of a hilarious thing to think of. It's just that it leaves your mind pretty quickly because there's a bomb on the boat seconds later. But it is like a, what the fuck are you doing, Frank? Like, you're afraid of the kid drowning? You jumped and like
threw I thought he realized like there was danger. I didn't realize that it was just because he was. But I had to rewatch.
He's just so concerned. He's just so concerned. It's like a legitimate, genuine love for this kid. And like they have a lot of actually very cute scenes together. Like Fletcher.
Yeah, Fletcher is awesome.
The kid who plays Fletcher is great. Like, such a natural young actor. Like, it really plays very nicely. It's like the stoic guy and like just a nice little kid who's just like, hey, do you like boats? And, you know, they do the whole kind of intro, and it's actually adorable. Yeah. So again, sorry, again, being long-winded here, but I think they I think they kind of make it work, at least for me, in terms of that aspect of it. Being like, instead of, you know, pointing it out necessarily, it's like, oh, it's totally cool that this is just what a family can look like. It's cool. You can have your little retreat in the mountains. The composition, you know, of the family.
She gets to just exist as a super mega star. It's kind of like, it's refreshing, I think, in a way. And I don't know. That's my limited perspective to speaking, but
more limited. But
before we move on to the final segment, I think you kind of touched on it, and we've both touched on it. But I think, and again, last week we were talking about Wild Wild West, and we were discussing the ways in which sometimes the movie has good elements or works on paper, and then something is missing. And we talked a lot about the concepts of sort of like life and soul in a movie, right? And how a little charm can go a long way. And I think this is, and how that was really lacking. And in my opinion, I think that The Bodyguard is the opposite. Like, it has a bunch of weird flaws that we can't just some weird aspects of it, and in the storyline, and things that you probably forget the minute you stop watching the movie because they were drowned in a bunch of other things. And it's kind of like, it's very quintessential 90s, I think. Yes. And it's got a little of everything. It's got mystery and action and obviously romance and family drama and all those things. You're never really bored watching it. It's constantly moving. I think the format and the editing sort of date the movie a lot, and they make it cheesy. But I don't know. I kind of feel like it has that quality that we were talking about, the sort of je ne sais quoi that makes, you know, the movie charming, and that makes you want to sort of forgive the flaws. And I kind of had the feeling that you're sort of on the same boat there.
Yeah, I completely. I'm riding that boat too, 100%. Like, it really is like a very corny movie. And I think you need to kind of go in knowing it's a pretty corny 90s movie. But it has a little spark. Whether or not Kevin Costner does it for you, it has a little spark of life, I think. And, like, I think it is down to a lot of the performances. And, again, the script is actually not bad. Like, just kind of sitting there thinking about a lot of lines and thinking about how the pacing is, it's actually quite good. It's kind of like, this is a well-made movie. It is not, like, a crappy movie that, you know, has the parts and they're not fitting or something like that. It actually moves pretty swiftly and remains entertaining throughout. Even when it's a little too corny at times, it still does feel like, all right, at least we're moving along. We're moving along here. All right, that's fine. And that core life of Whitney and her performance really, really. I think with a lesser actress in the lead, or a lesser, you know, performer.
Personality,
Even say it, that way. With a less charismatic person in the lead, this could have been like a disaster, like a full on, like, oh boy, disaster, even with like a decent script. It really needs that magnetism and charm to work. And she brought it for me, for my money. She absolutely brought it. So I think it is. It has the thing that poor Wild Wild West lacked so badly. So
I'm actually curious because I read like a couple of reviews. I didn't read a lot. And I read one that was kind of like talking about how Whitney wasn't able to sort of give the layers that maybe the character could have done with just because she was an inexperienced actress and stuff. But I don't know. I'm curious because I couldn't kind of to feel the sentiment, right? Things that you can't necessarily find Googling it 3 decades later, but
but there's a way I almost want to articulate it, and it's like this. There is an extended close-up towards the very end of the movie where she's singing, you know, the title, it's not the title song, but, you know, I will always love you. You know, the song everybody knows and knows the beginning of, you know, and it just stays in a close-up on her, and just watching that is compelling, at least for me. Like, just this close-up, just her magnetism, her personality, her charm, as she's singing, as she's like belting out this song, she's interesting to watch. She is charming to watch. She's interesting to see her perform. It's interesting to see her do these things. And so for me, if you can just stay on a close-up for however long, I didn't count it or anything, but it was like a fairly long close-up, you know, to just stay on one shot. if you can do that, you're going to be able to sell a movie. I am. Yeah.
You're right. So, yeah. I absolutely agree with you. And it's just that quality. And I was very much drawn to her the entire time. The camera obviously really loved her.
Yes.
Yeah. I sometimes feel like I want to be like a baby bird fed by my mom bird. Like she's already chewed up the food and gives it to me. That's kind of how I like my, that was a disgusting analogy. And I'm sorry.
You know, but it's
that's
great. I love it.
Kind of how I feel about movies sometimes. Like I'm tired. Life is exhausting. I like to have this movie that's done all the digesting. For me. Yeah. And it's just feeding me the little pieces already broken up. I'm good.
It's true. It's true. And I genuinely do think this movie had at least some things to say about Hollywood and the way it treats women. Like I think it was doing some work. Maybe it wasn't doing like all the work, but it was you know, it was giving you lots of pieces and it maybe also was like, oh, but also understand sexism is bad. So that was kind of cool.
Also, kids. Sexism is bad.
So don't be sexist. It sucks.
Also, don't hire a hitman to kill your family members as a general rule.
Don't quote get stoned unquote, and try to get your family members killed.
And hire Armando to kill your family members. No, that is frowned upon. Illegal.
Don't do that.
Avoid it. I like how we always end our shows with like a very important lesson.
You know, we have lessons.
So I guess that settles it for the stripping it down part of our show. And now we move on to our final segment. The segment when we decide whether this movie we just watched masterpiece or not a masterpiece, where it belongs in our video store. If it goes to our staff picks, if it goes to our middle aisle, which is fine. The middle aisle is cool. There's no shame in being in the middle aisle, but there is shame in being tossed at the dumpster. So now we decide the fate of The Bodyguard in our final segment, Shelf Life. Okay, I think I can kind of predict where we're going with this.
I think so too.
We'll be in the same page, but we'll start. Well, you can go, Danielle. Where would you put this movie?
I think this is an ultimate good middle aisle movie. Mm-hmm. Like this is a solid ass movie. It is a solid pick. I would not be upset if somebody came home from the video store and was like, here's what I got for you. I'd be like, oh, The Bodyguard. Yeah, I'll watch The Bodyguard. That sounds pretty cool. I don't know that it's a staff pick for me. I think I don't think it's quite there. I don't think it's quite there.
And listen,
we might, you know, we might shift things someday. Yeah. We might decide, hey, you know what? Maybe the core doesn't belong on the staff.
Maybe Lionheart.
Maybe Lionheart gets, you know, conveniently slightly drop kicked down one day. But like, Bodyguard is respectable. Like, I don't want to say this is a mediocre movie. I don't think it's mediocre. I think it's like a good, respectable movie that's a good place for it. That middle shelf, that middle aisle.
I'm with you. I totally agree. I think it's the quintessential middle aisle movie. When I said it's like an airplane movie, I mean it as a compliment. Because you're in an airplane, you don't have many entertainment options. You're probably anxious. I don't know. I get a little anxious.
Oh, me? I am. Yeah, yeah.
So you're looking for something that is going to like entertain you, distract you, but will also like keep your attention enough. And to me, The Bodyguard is really that. It's kind of like comfort food.
Yeah.
In form of a movie to me.
Yes.
And that's, you know, and like you said, I feel like I've watched it several times now and as a kid. And then most recently, I think I've seen it three times and I wouldn't mind watching it again.
Yeah.
And that's not a bad thing. That's good. That's a specific quality that we must appreciate in a movie. It didn't blow me away, but I feel like there's something beautiful about movies that you turn to get like sort of a sense of comfort. Absolutely. And that to me is The Bodyguard, even though a bunch of bad shit happens. Then they kiss in the end, and then nothing else matters. And then you hear, "I will always love you," and it just gives you that warm, fuzzy feeling in your heart, and that's beautiful. So I'm with you. Love. I don't think it's a staff pick for now, but I would put it in a respectable, like a center position in our middle aisle, so that people can just like go straight into it and see that beautiful poster. Which, by the way, I read someplace. That it wasn't actually Whitney. It was her body double.
Oh my God, really?
Because she had left.
I mean, that makes sense, I guess.
They don't show her face. So no way of knowing for sure. But that's kind of what I read as I was doing my research for today. I guess we're, that was a very easy conclusion for us there.
Yeah.
A respectable.
We knew.
I think we knew coming into it. We try to keep an open mind, but this and Wild Wild West were already already pretty set on what was gonna happen.
I'm pleasantly surprised, honestly. I was actually a little worried this was gonna really not be a good one for me. Like, again, having not seen it in like 20 years, I was like, oh boy.
It was my suggestion, so I'm happy that you weren't angered by it.
No, you did a great job. You did a really good job. I'm very happy. I
feel like it was a very good way for us to kick off this month.
Yeah.
Right? So I guess that is it for this week. Thank you, my co-host, for joining me. Thank you all at home for listening. Thank you to our producer, Paul, Tuesday Morning Brunch Tamayo, for all the help in making this show not suck and actually be pretty cool, because it is a pretty cool show. We hope you come back to our friendly neighborhood video store next week. We will be continuing our Happy Pop Holly Divas month with, I'm saying Holly Divas, but is it Holly Diva or Holly Divas? We're not.
I think it's either.
I think it could be either.
You know, it's not a specific.
It's whatever you want, dear listener. Call it whatever you want. Call it whatever your heart tells you to, because that's the spirit of Pop Holly Divas month. And we will be continuing it next week with 1985's Mad Max Beyond Thunderdome, featuring none other than Tina Turner. Until then, join our movie club. Come by fanbite.casa and join the You Love to See channel for news, updates, discussion, and special events. We want to hear from you, so come on by. You can follow us on all social media at Fanbite Media, at Fanbite on Instagram. We're at Fanbite on TikTok. We're on fanbite.com. Danielle, where can our listeners find you specifically?
Find me on Twitter at Danielle R.I.
See, can get in touch with us pretty much anywhere you want. We're omnipresent. If you want to dance with somebody, okay, no, I'll stop. I promise.
Yes! That was the last one. No, that was so good!
I lied. That was the last one. If you want to dance with somebody, dance with us.
Somebody who loves you.
We will see you all next week. Until then, you'll love to see it.